Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Drive Through HR. Brian, William, and Nisha coming to you live every day, talking about people HR-ish type topics. So let's get to our guests, because I've got a feeling that people will be different from this point on in their lives after this conversation. I'm putting it out there. So, Brew, welcome to Drive Through HR.
Hey, Brian, thanks for having me. Life-changing. I hope I can accomplish that. Yeah.
Yeah. So you don't want to disappoint millions of people. So you got to go deep on this one, both emotionally and spiritually, in all your answers. So
no pressure at all on that.
Well, if you would introduce yourself to our family of listeners, and then we'll get with it.
All right. So, hey, everybody. My name is Brew. I work for a great company called BTC Revolutions. That's Be the Change Revolutions, where I am the director of awesome. I also, on the side, each Friday run a show myself called My Community Manager Hangout, where we talk all things community managers with that community. So thanks again for having me.
Well, excellent, my man. So what is top of mind with you these days? You're social. Like I said, you've got social nailed about as well as anybody that I know. So with people in HR and everything going on social, what's up?
Well, I think, I guess top of mind for me is always just community managers. It's my passion. It's what I think about every day. On the topic of HR, just how community managers can kind of mingle in the HR space. You know, if you think about it, a community manager is really just somebody who is a connector, just a conduit of information. So from a marketing standpoint, those are the voice of the brand to the community, and then the voice of the community to the brand. But often, because they are that one voice, they have to make a lot of relationships internally inside the organization across all of the silos so they can effectively do their jobs. One of the things that we've talked a lot about in the community management sort of community is, you almost become a silo buster after a while because you're hearing so much of what's going on, so that in order to communicate that to kind of the community outside or the consumers, you're also able to kind of connect some dots internally. I think that is such an important role to play within companies that just isn't really being talked about enough or recognized enough.
What do you think we could, for the HR and recruiting community, what can we learn from community managers?
So I think it's interesting because at the end of the day, what community managers learn from is how to interact with people. If you think about it, that's our job every single day. We're interacting with people. And so HR kind of aligns pretty well with community management because HR has to do with humans, right? One of the things that when you ask a community manager what they believe is the most important kind of quality that a person needs to become a community manager, they'll respond with empathy. And you'll hear that probably 8 to 9 times out of 10. I think we might agree, from an HR perspective, empathy is also important, wouldn't you think?
Oh, absolutely. It's got to be hardwired into, I mean, you got to be able to care. You got to be able to put yourself in the other person's shoes pretty much at all times. The thing is, there's a diminished return to empathy that most people don't want to kind of admit publicly, that at one point you have to see it, feel it, view it, and then kind of get on with it. But yeah, you absolutely, and it, to be successful in HR, you absolutely, I don't think there's a case for a person that doesn't have empathy and being successful in HR. You know, let me ask you a question, because when things are going well, you know, I think it's pretty easy for folks. It's when things get tough. So US Airways, you know, this week, you know, that's a great example of when things kind of just don't go your way that particular day.
They
crash and burn, some would say. So, how do you recover? Like, what have y'all talked about in your group in terms of creating goodwill when there's, you know, something that's tragic, something that's bad, something that maybe even could have been helped? How do you recover from that?
Well, I think the first important point to make is that hopefully you've already invested in building a great community. You'll hear this over and over again from, you know, multiple kind of sources, but relationships take time, right? And so it would be unfortunate if right out of the gate without a strong community you have a disaster like that. Hopefully, if you've built a strong community that loves you, loves your product, loves what you're doing, they may do a little SMH and roll their eyes, but essentially still be there for the brand, and hopefully, you know, have some empathy of their own, knowing that, boy, you know, this is probably a rogue employee that did this. You know, this definitely doesn't reflect the brand that I love, and I think beyond having that community, you know, you just have to admit, you know, hey, we admit that something wrong here happened. We're embarrassed by it, and please forgive us, and be as human as you can in that apology, which, you know, I think you know, you definitely could tell there were probably a lot of people at the table, I'm guessing, trying to craft the messaging, and you can definitely see the PR influence stick out with it, which is trying to explain something like, oh no, we tried to ban a tweet and report it, and suddenly some software that only we have copied that URL into our buffer, and we accidentally pasted it, which then, you know, sort of trying to talk your way out of explaining it, I think, you know, also doesn't really do it for you know, your customers. So.
Yeah, you spoke of software. Let's get into some of the tools and tricks, because you know, one of the things you've always been good at since I've known you is you're good on the tools side. You understand kind of what software, how to keep track of your audience, listen to your audience, stay in touch with your audience, etc. So what's the bailiwick? What do y'all use these days that HR or even recruiters should be kind of having in their arsenal of tools?
Yeah, so, you know, it's funny because people always just assume that the tools are kind of like an end-all, be-all. What I found is that although there's some tools that do a decent job for some aspects of things, that there isn't one overall tool that kind of solves all my problems. So I'll start with saying that Microsoft Excel is my friend, and really just like storing all of the information I need to know as I'm building the relationships with the end users. I use a product called Nimble, which definitely from a recruitment standpoint I think would be really interesting. So Nimble is a social CRM, actually built for social first. One of the great advantages of Nimble is that it keeps track of all of my conversations that I'm having on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and my email for me, and as well as you know, links the different profiles of people across platforms. And that's sort of more of an open database architecture. So there's times I will add somebody new to my data, you know, to my kind of connections, and automatically it says, hey, I'm pretty sure this is that same person on LinkedIn and same person on Facebook, et cetera, and I can just confirm those relationships. The other big thing I love about Nimble is that it allows me to keep tabs on how often I keep my relationships fresh. So I can say, hey, you know what, this guy here, I want to make sure that I'm talking to him at least once a month. And so I can set up that reminder, and automatically, if I talk to that person in the month, Nimble will reset my counter, but then alert me in my daily kind of emails of things it should suggest I should do for my relationships. Those people will pop up. And so it just, as your network grows, which I'm sure many recruiters have extensive networks, it's just a way to kind of keep track of all the important people beyond what my brain can do. A tip I always say from a HR perspective is, you know, get yourself TweetDeck and set up a list of your employees. You don't necessarily have to follow them, but you might as well be seeing what they're saying on the Twitters. That can often clue you in to maybe some things that are going on that you might want to alert managers or even go have a talk with that person directly. Those are probably the top tools, you know, that, and then there's also this great tool we recently discovered called Keyhole, which is really just helping us find influencers on certain topics. And hashtags and things like that. So I think maybe from a recruiting standpoint, if I'm recruiting for, you know, a certain topic, Keyhole might help me discover some people that are influential on those keywords.
We'll get your take on him. Oh, go ahead, Brian.
And just kind of staying down the technology path, Google Hangout. You probably do more Hangouts. I mean, you're one of the folks that I've learned the most about. You embracing that technology, kind of elephant in the room, you know, G+, like where does Google play into the whole social technology platform realm?
Sure. So I personally look at Google Plus as not necessarily me personally, a destination place. I don't normally log into Google Plus and say, hey, let me read my feed. That's what I have Facebook for and Twitter for, and personally I just don't have enough bandwidth to add another stream to my life. But Google Plus is really, you know, the social aspect of it is, if you think about it, what Google is doing is tying all of its greatest tools all together in one. So now you got YouTube, a place where Generation C hangs out, watching videos all day long, but now their comments live inside the Google Plus system. Now I can invite somebody to a Hangout, both through my Gmail and through my Google Plus. And so they brought all the chat features in and bring Hangouts to both the phone as well as the Google Plus site. I think Hangouts are huge because it's the future of connecting without having to be in the same physical space. Our company, BTC Revolutions, we are a Google Apps company. We are 100% virtual, which means we have no office, yet we do great business and are connecting with each other all day long by having many Hangout sessions in replace of, large meetings. If instead of going back and forth on email a million times, trying to just craft the words just right so that that person understands you, you can just pop up on a Hangout. Video chat each other, explain it, talk it out as if you were in the same environment. So I think Google Hangouts are definitely a way for the workplace to start expanding beyond the four walls. And then I also think, you know, just from a brand perspective, Google Plus and its Hangouts are a great place to do these live events. Just recently, I know there was a Showtime, some new Showtime show launched. They did a launch party and actually had a Google Hangout with the directors and, you know, kind of producers and all of that, all on a Google Hangout. And people watched all over the world all at the same time. So it was kind of like this launch party of the show. And that's something you couldn't do in the past.
That's very cool. Hey, we've got a couple of things. We've got about half the shows already in the box. Get your take on employees as brand ambassadors. First of all, I want to get your general take and whether or not you even like that concept. And if you do, how do we unlock, as HR folks, how do we unlock those folks?
Let's see. So, yeah, I mean, I think brand ambassadors are extremely powerful. And I think they can be done both inside and outside of the organization. But there's definitely, you know, I think you gain, if you're the right company, you gain a double advantage to having an employee be a brand ambassador. Number one is, you know, you have somebody who's super passionate about the brand, who's out there every day just telling people how much they love about it. If they have a great network, you know, obviously that news is scaling and getting you great impressions, so to speak. And if they love the place that they work at as well, which you know, hopefully a good brand ambassador not only loves the brand but loves working for the brand. You know, think about that just from an employee or an employment branding opportunity. You now have this person out there saying how great it is to work there. And hopefully being an incoming funnel for you for great talent. So that person's friends who may be talented know, hey, boy, you know, I'm looking for a new job. I'm not really happy where I am. So I'm going to go talk to Bill because, boy, he loves his job. And it sounds really cool there. And I think I want to be a part of that tribe.
So influencers. So I got to get your take on influence, just your general, like, you know, unlocking, finding them, this, that, and the other. But the darker side of that is I want to get your take on pay for play, where, you know, the Kim Kardashian showing up at the nightclub in Vegas for $200,000, et cetera. Like, take us into the world of influencers, because we might not all be as savvy about it as you. And then tell us a little bit about your takes on it, and what do you think of pay for play?
Well, I kind of look at an influencer as sort of your old school spokesperson. Just because somebody has, you know, perceived influence, however, doesn't mean that necessarily they're going to be a great advocate for you. You know, definitely the home run is when you can find someone who's willing to advocate for your brand for no cost. And is also a pretty large influencer. So on the pay to play side of things, you know, I think that you should be compensated. You know, people who have built up a large personal network or their own large personal brand should be compensated for, you know, trying to represent your product or expose their audience to whatever you're doing. You know, if you can command large dollars to be able to, you know, so let me just back up a minute. I know, you know, let's take blogging, for example. So if I want to take a bunch of bloggers who I perceive as influential and I want them to write about my product, it's a long journey. I'm building relationships with them. Maybe they're going to pull a favor for me, or maybe it just so happens they love it enough that they might write about it. But if you know, and the other flip side to that is, you know, not to bash mommy blogging, but, you know, there's definitely kind of like a little bit of a weird connotation when you think about, like, just people who are out there every day, like, my blog exists so I can get free gift cards, right? And there's not a lot of value in that for the brand. But what if you can take a great blogging network who are interested in looking at different opportunities that they might enjoy writing about and also get paid. A website to check out is actually triber.com. Dino Dogan over there is doing a great job of, you know, taking bloggers who don't mind making money, because in the end, that's what they're out to do. And then connecting brands in with bloggers who might be passionate about the cause, the movement, the product or service. I know I sidetracked a little bit on that, but
go ahead, Brian.
Hey, William, I just want to go on the record that I will absolutely pour out anything that I need to get pay to play. I've never been asked, but I just want to make sure that I put that out there. FYI. No shame.
So how do you, and kidding aside, because I think Brian makes a really good point, how do you get to fair compensation? Because you mentioned fair compensation during your response. How do you determine that? What is fair compensation?
So I would say that, probably right now there's not enough of a market, or I guess it's so wide-ranged, it's hard to kind of tell. I mean, you have, depending on how influential that person is, you may be willing to pay a couple $100 for kind of a blog post, up to several $1,000s, maybe for a series of blog posts. But, if you look out there, you can buy content. So there are content farms where you can pay upwards to about $200 an article to have a staff of authors write for you, in the brand voice and everything like that. And so, that might be a good starting point. It could be what's good for you. But really, I think why other than blogging for just pure fun, right? If you have the ability to craft a great message, I think you should get paid for it. And I think brands should start realizing that social media isn't free, and that great content isn't free. Sometimes that happens. You get some great user-generated stuff, but the facts are is good stuff costs money.
So let's pivot to employer brand. One of Brian's favorite questions is the stop, start, continue. As you look at brands, I know that you work with a lot of great brands, what should recruiters and the people on the front end of this process, when we're trying to recruit talent to the organization, what should we stop doing, start doing, and continue to do?
Oh, boy. So let's see here. I think... Boy, stop doing, huh? I would say, I don't know, man. I think you caught me a little off guard with this question here. Let's see. What should...
That doesn't happen often, by the way.
Yeah, I'm just
going to... Maybe I'm trying to give too good of an answer here. Yeah, I don't know.
Just let him sit and sort of swirl like vinyl.
You're out there on that branch.
Yeah.
Well, it's the question is, basically as you look at these brands, you see some of the fails. The fails are pretty easy, so we should probably stop doing some of those types of things and posting all of our jobs to our Twitter stream, nonstop open positions. I think that's a pretty simple. We should just, if you're doing that, you should just stop that, or people are going to punch you in the face. But as you look at these brands, where do you see people doing it really well when they're recruiting folks?
Yeah. So I think. Yeah. I guess. Just to reiterate, the stop would be is stop just treating social as a push mechanism for your employment opportunities, and start looking at it as a way to build relationships. I would say that and also as an opportunity to start showcasing the great things that your employees are doing. You look at kind of like Taco Bell and the whole Live Moss aspect. They do a great job sort of blending their employees with their marketing. And so I think brands should take notice and start doing that a little bit more. And then from a continued standpoint, really just, continue discussing this topic, and continue, figuring out how we get better employees in the system, get them excited, and telling everybody else how great it is to work there, and being okay with knowing that sometimes means fixing the company, right? There's only so much marketing can hide or do.
But take the audience into brands that are doing things really well from your perspective. They're interacting with their community in what you feel is kind of the most appropriate way.
Well, I think that if you look at the restaurant industry, you know, your Applebee's, your Denny's, your Chili's, Pizza Hut, things like that. You know, I think they're all doing a really good job of having conversations with the consumers every day, and really investing in the manpower it takes to accomplish that. And so, you know, not just piling on the duty of responding to someone who's already doing a million other things, but carving out specific roles for people to talk to, you know, potential employer or potential employees, talk to potential consumers, as well as, you know, kind of help funnel the customer service type issues.
Brian, you had a question?
Innovation. I mean, I love my innovation question. So what's some, like 2014, in the last few months, where have you seen innovation in the social space? I mean, what's something that's really kind of caught your eye that you're pretty excited about?
So what I'm really excited about is this concept of entertainment being created, kind of these new age of actors and musicians that are emerging, you know, from outside of the traditional system. And primarily you're seeing that on YouTube, but also on, you know, sites like YouNow, which is kind of like linked to YouTube. And it's interesting to me because you're actually seeing talent agencies form that are completely virtual to gobble up you know, YouTube celebrities or web celebrities, let's call them, who are, you know, creating great content. There's this kid, his name, he goes by Pomage. He's a video gamer. He creates videos of him. Like, he's just a really good video gamer. I think he plays Call of Duty. And he does voiceovers and records himself playing Call of Duty. And these videos, he just hit 1 million subscribers. He's got offers, like they said. I believe, I don't know if it's him or a different gamer, but they said when those guys wear like these special Razer headsets in their videos, the minute that video launches, they sell out of that headset on all websites. So there are just regular people making big impact just by doing things they're passionate about, and they happen to be entertaining. And so as an example, Pomage hasn't even graduated high school yet. It's his last year, but the guy, you know, is already getting multiple offers to join kind of this virtual talent agency. He doesn't have to move to Hollywood. He doesn't have to move to New York and wait tables. And so I'm really fascinated where, you know, by this whole idea of anyone being a creator and being able to kind of connect with other creators and you know, and bring entertainment, even on just small levels. I mean, some of these YouTube channels, you know, their show is watched at least by, you know, 20,000 people a day. I mean, you see one of their videos come out, oh, it's got 20,000 views, but some of them have 200,000 views. Some of them get 1 million views a day, it's just amazing to me that, you know, these people have an opportunity to connect with the world and share their message right from their own homes. And technology is there and has got us there.
All right, my friend, we're in the last minute. Tell us a little bit about what the rest of the, I guess, the 8 months in front of us looks like for you, what travel you have, and also how can people connect with you offline?
So offline, you can connect with me, or online, you can go, I'm at House of Brew on Twitter. You can also, my email is houseofbrew@gmail.com if you want to hit me up there. I'm also on the Facebooks, and I believe all my posts are public there. So even if we're not friends, you can still see what I'm doing. Upcoming, I don't know the dates, but I know that I'm going to be at Missouri Sherm, which I'm really excited about that. I believe I'm going to also be at Sherm Annual as well, if not attending, at least sort of in and around the area, saying hi to all my good friends who are probably listening to the show today.
Awesome, my friend. Listen, thanks. Thanks again. I know you've got a lot of stuff going on. I appreciate you coming on and dropping some knowledge. Thanks to everyone for listening to Drive Through HR today. Everyone have a wonderful Thursday. We're going to go out to a little Pharrell.
It might seem crazy what I'm about to say.
Thanks, friend.